This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. Since 2010, we've been broadcasting sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, we spotlight diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world. I invite you to listen and change how you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where we're focusing on SEL, that's social-emotional learning for stronger IQ and relationships. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Barron. Dr. Barron is a seasoned school psychologist and therapist in private practice with more than 30 years of experience dedicated to helping children, adolescents, and their families navigate complex emotional and behavioral challenges by tapping into their character strengths. Dr. Barron has authored several books, including Teaching with a Strength-Based Approach, How to Motivate Students and Build Relationships. Welcome, Dr. Stephen Barron. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm very happy to be here.
I am very happy and excited to talk about this subject because as somebody who's been in the positive psychology world for a couple of decades, I find it refreshing and comforting to know that these methodologies, these strength-based curriculum is being infused in schools and how important it is for not only our student learners, but our own lifelong learning.
Absolutely. A lot of evidence, a lot of research, a lot of anecdotal reports as well of how looking at strengths of kids and people in general enhances motivation, instills a sense of hopefulness and just general optimism and engagement, greater engagement with the material that we're learning about. So taking a strength-based approach absolutely enhances the social emotional learning of children and adults.
And when we talk about strengths, let's give a smattering of these values in action. The VIA is what I was educated to call them. So people have an idea of what we're talking about, that it's strengths not in the physical musculature, but more the emotional musculature of us as human beings.
That's an excellent way to put it. And it is exactly in the emotional realm. And we want to look at, when we talk about a strength-based approach, We want to look at the resources and capabilities that a person has. I kind of look at it as drilling for oil. You have that valuable resource underground and you have to kind of drill. And then when you drill what and you hit it, you have to tap into it and utilize it. You have to identify where it is, be able to use it, you know, and implement it and for the person's growth and benefit. And it absolutely, and I do find that kids, whether they know it or not, have strengths and have resources. They may not realize it themselves. And it's important to help them enlighten them to what's within them, the buried treasure within.
Well, let's talk a little bit about mining for that buried treasure and maybe an example, maybe from one of your students or clients, sure, where you help them uncover or mine their strengths.
Well, there's many examples. I could give one story that many stories come to mind. I'll give you one story. There was a young girl in elementary school, and she had a very difficult time getting to school on time. She had a very difficult time attending and focusing. She would get to school late. When she would get to school, she would put her head down on her desk. She wasn't very engaged and very motivated. She didn't really have a lot of friends either socially. And I consulted with the teacher, and you know, one way to look at that would be, well, does she have social skills deficits? Does she have focusing issues. And those would be, you know, valid ways to look at it. However, I decided, you know, coming from a strength-based approach, I decided to take a different vantage point with the teacher. We began to brainstorm, what does this girl do well? What are her capabilities? What are her resources? And the teacher mentioned that the few times that she is given a task to do in class, she is responsible. She gets it done. And so then we thought of, well, what can we offer this girl in the classroom to help her get more engaged? And we came up with the idea of, this is just one example, of making her an attendance monitor. She would get a clipboard. She would walk around the classroom. And when the teacher approached her with it, it wasn't like, I have a job for you to do. You have to do this. It was more like, I think you could really help me. I think you could be really capable and talented at this. And I could use your help because I'm very busy in the morning. I'm getting the class ready and so on. And the girl immediately embraced it. And I had spoken to the parent prior to get their okay, and they were very on board with it. So we noticed within just a few days, the girl came to school on time. That was a big thing. And she would get her clipboard and she would walk around the room and take attendance while the teacher was getting ready. And it forced her to briefly interact with other kids. So notice them, hello, not hi, which she hadn't been doing. And after the attendance was over, it just seemed like her mindset changed. She began to get more engaged with the lesson. She wasn't putting her head down on a chair. She would begin to volunteer more in the class. It was a very interesting shift in how she approached school. And as a postscript to the story, the mom, when I presented this to her, she had the idea of, you know, she liked the idea a lot and she was very excited, but she said, you know, we fight a lot at home. There's a lot of disagreements. Do you have any ideas for that? So I suggested to her that she keep what I called at the time a good behavior book, that when the child would wake up, you know, she would have a little notebook and just jot down big or small things that the child did that pleased the mother. It could be little things like hanging up her coat, putting the dishes in the sink, or bigger things like helping a sister with her homework, let's say, or asking to help mom, or tasks that, you know, were bigger in nature. And at the end of the day, before bedtime, the mother would take out the good behavior book and they would review all the positive pro-social behaviors that the mom caught the child doing during the day. She would just jot them in her book during the day, wouldn't tell the child. And every night became part of their bedtime ritual, they would review the strengths and the pro-social behaviors this little girl did. And within, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks, we saw at home and at school, there was a demonstrable shift in this child's behavior in terms of her cooperation, but more than cooperative, just being happier and being satisfied with herself. So that's an example of a strength-based intervention.
This is great. And I think we understand the ways that this can be used, right? These are simple interventions, right? They're free. They don't cost anything.
100%.
You know,
yes.
They're not pharmacological. We love that.
No, definitely not. That's the beauty of it. The beauty of it, Lisa. They're free, easy to implement. And I think the thing, it encourages a sense of optimism and hope.
Yes.
It's not focusing on what's wrong with, that's the big thing. What's wrong with this kid? That's not our driving question. We want to know what challenges a child faces, sure. But we want to balance it out and see what do they do well? What can they accomplish for themselves with the proper situation, circumstances?
Well, you know, something comes to mind, what you just said about leveraging what's right with a child, right? And using that to create a scaffold to help the child self-correct or be able to work with those behaviors that aren't as desirable, putting them in charge is what I guess where I'm getting at, making them understand they're the CEO actually of their own lives, that we believe in them to make good decisions.
I love that analogy, yeah. The CEO. Really, and to your point, what we're talking about is we're empowering the child. We're empowering the child to take control of their behavior, of their learning, and how they want to view themselves and experience the world. So very much so.
We're going to need to take a break. But before we go out on that break, that ties into our own sovereignty, right? As we grow up and we learn to be good thinkers and good doers. If we are able to embody this mindset, we end up being better people, right? We operate better in the world, better in our relationships, better as leaders. And Lord knows we need that, right?
Touche to all of that. All true. Absolutely.
Let's pop out for a break. And before we do, I want to give a shout out to Dr. Stephen Barron's book, Teaching with a Strength-Based Approach, How to Motivate Students and Build Relationships. You can connect with Steve on X at Dr. Stephen Barron, on Facebook, LinkedIn, the same. And the website to go to is Dr. Stephen Barron, and that's with a single R, BARON.com. Here comes the pause. We'll be right back. Harvesting Happiness is rooted in science. Our work facilitates applied positive psychology practices through media and consulting. We're committed to sound ideas for better well-being, leading to increased life satisfaction and a better world for everyone. We're not into pseudoscience or quick fixes. We're focused on common sense backed by rigorous research. Healthy critical thinking is the foundation for our discussions. We encourage you to challenge preconceptions and explore ideas with a curiously discerning mind. Collaboration with our guests is united by an inclusive vision to boost resilience, critical thinking, communication, and problem solving through civilized discourse and pleasurable relational engagement for everyone. Each day, we have the intellectual freedom to be happy or the liberty to be miserable, regardless of external circumstances. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, please seek support because good psychological health is vital to the achievement of a healthy and satisfying life. Visit harvestinghappiness.com for psychosocial and educational services that boost emotional and social intelligence. And we're back, continuing the conversation with Dr. Stephen Barron. We're talking about SEL, that social emotional learning for stronger IQ and relationships. Let's get back to it. So, Steve, let's talk about the pervasive mental health crisis or epidemic that the United States and other countries are facing today and how strength-based learning can help.
Well, pervasive, unfortunately, is the word, Lisa. It really is. Two statistics, just to give it a context. The CDC recently estimated that almost one-fifth of kids between the ages of 3 and 17 could have a diagnosable mental health condition. And isn't that, that's a lot of children and adolescents. And I came across a statistic just very recently. Since the onset of the pandemic in 2020, the percentage of prescriptions for psychotropic medication for children, that includes anxiety, depression, ADHD, has exponentially grown. There's 64% increase in prescriptions written over this four-year period. So when you talk about a mental health epidemic, it truly is one. And in fact, the Surgeon General has written about this. I just read before we came on today, he released a report yesterday that parenting is a social emotional variable and that is at risk, that puts people at risk in terms of the parents being at risk for their mental health.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you brought that up, right? I'm a parent of young adults now, but the parenting really never ends. And when we talk about the interplay between parenting and happiness or subjective well-being in those hard parenting years of adolescence, it's like, boy, everybody is struggling. So it's no surprise what you are sharing. But calling it a mental health crisis is important to label it what it is. But isn't it important to also normalize and validate the challenges that we all experienced with our mental health going through the pandemic and just the trials and tribulations of life, right?
You know, 100%. You know, the Surgeon General recently, he wrote in his report about parenting that we have to understand that mental health is health.
Yeah.
We just can't equate health with physical
well-being. It's not somewhere over there.
Yes, yes. And it's very real. And I think in terms of learning and achievement in school, one of the issues is that teachers, and that's what really motivated me to write the book, is that teachers are really on the firing line more so than ever. More so than ever, they have to deal with non-academic issues as well as whatever curriculum they have to cover and so forth, and material they need to get the kids up to speed on. But if you look at the hats that a teacher wears, they're coaches, they're therapists, they're parents, they're you name it. You know, there's so many different hats. And so I feel that teachers need something in their toolbox to help them be able to manage what is going on in their classrooms. And every child comes in with their own story, with their own strengths or challenges. And it's very important if we want to maximize learning, we want to maximize engagement and social interaction. We sort of have to take a look at how we can bring out the strengths of children, how we can connect with kids for them to be able to show us what they got.
In terms of teachers and the amazing, thankless work that they all do.
Absolutely. Unsung heroes.
Unsung heroes. And we forgot the label of modern bodyguard, right? That's another role that teachers are called to
take on,
take on, you know, is the sort of the custodians of our children's safety. And how that impacts mental health, by the way.
For the teacher and for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, there's been research that shows that these drills that they do in schools, these safety drills, where they lock the doors, it has a very negative impact on children's mental health. It heightens anxiety. These are the drills. I'm not talking about, you know, it heightens anxiety and fear. And it really impacts how these children get through their day. And I went through one and in the school, and I was anxious during it because it was very realistic. And I was looking about at these children. I'm thinking, my God, if I'm uncomfortable with this, because it is an uncomfortable topic, obviously, but what are these children? How are they processing it? How are they absorbing what's going on around them? So you're right. Teachers didn't sign up to be bodyguards and all these other things necessarily, but unfortunately, it's become part of their role.
To what you're saying about the drills, I have my brother used to live in Denver, and he had kids in the public schools there, and they used to do these active shooter drills until one day there was a shooting at the school. And the kids were, of course, very well prepared, but they stopped doing the drills because it was so traumatic after that moment.
Really?
And I can think of when my own kids were in school that I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and I was told that there was an active shooter at the kids' school. I started getting texts from my kids. It was on the news. CNN was there. I'm like, oh, my word. Now, this was a long time ago, right? Because my kids are now grown. So when we talk about mental health, it's not just about the academics anymore. It's about the full experience that a child and families go through when they send their kids off to school.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, children go to school. They have so much on their plate as it is. And to be concerned about, is it going to be okay today? Am I going to be safe? And this is an important thing, children feeling a sense of security. Even as infants, they have to feel a sense of secure attachment to their caretaker in the world. And that's how they're able to go out in the world. And they're coming to school, which is kind of a family, which is like a second family to children. Where is that sense of attachment and security and safety? If they don't experience it, it's definitely going to impact their ability to learn and connect, and it'll heighten their anxiety and so forth. So it's very important that that's available for children. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not always the way we want it to be.
But when we tap into a strength-based model, both for adults, parents, educators, and kids, you know, it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert, that we can say to our children, my job is to keep you safe, and I will do that to the best of my ability, and know that when you're with me, that I will do this, you know?
I, That's a great way to put it. I think it conveys to a child that we're collaborating. Yeah. You're not just a passive person. I'm going to impart all this knowledge to you all the time. We're going to actively work together. I'm going to tap into what you could bring to the situation. Yeah. And I'm going to offer you what I can offer you. And I think that's how children get, to some degree, a sense of security, a sense of connectedness. And when they have those elements going for them, fear and anxiety tend to wane, and they're not as noted by the child. You know, if they're feeling it, it's not as prominent.
And when bad things happen, I mean, I think the other part of the equation too is like talking about when bad things happen, or if they do happen, we have so many skills to manage, you know, ourselves if things are not good. You know, so like the courage, the resilience, you know, the reframing the difficult moment as an opportunity for growth.
You know, you mentioned all those things, and just the word resilience. You know, one of the things that a strength-based approach does, you know, resilience can be defined as the ability to bounce back, the ability, you know, to come back from challenging or difficult situations. And when we help children get in touch with their assets, hidden or not so hidden, and use them and see that they can do things and they're capable and they're competent, it enhances resilience or the ability to bounce back from a situation that otherwise could be very, very hard for them.
Which is a skill that we take with us throughout our lifetime, right? Like, we will be disappointed. We will have failures. Things will not go our way. Bad things will happen to the people that we love and care about and to ourselves. And it's what we do with them, with this scaffold, right? With this strength scaffold that we hopefully are able to build for ourselves and our kids will dictate, I think, the long-term effects on our mental health and our happiness.
100%. And to your point, yes, we cannot control external events. We cannot control when awful, terrible things happen. But what we can try to get a handle on and what we can convey to children is they can't control their reactions. They can't control how they're going to process and react and respond to what it is that they're having to deal with. And, you know, the words we tell ourselves, the messages we give ourselves, the behavior choices that we make, they could make that easier or more difficult. So by tapping into a strength-based approach, having children become more resilient, we're giving them the tools they need, you know, to more effectively manage themselves and their reactions in a variety of situations.
And what about the importance of being the good model, right? That we don't just talk the talk, you know, but we are walking the talk, that we are exhibiting the behaviors, all the things that we wish to see in our children, that we are being that person in our daily lives, that we're congruent in the way we show up.
Absolutely. A picture's worth a thousand words. We can tell kids, don't do this, don't do that. But if they see us doing the things we tell them not to do, or us making choices that may not reflect best in terms of what we can model for children, that's a very powerful image for a child, and they take that with them. So absolutely, we have to be, and that's why teachers are in such a wonderful position, because kids spend over 1,000 hours, approximately 1,000 hours, whether it's elementary or secondary, it might be different, in the classroom. Sometimes it's more than when they see their own parents. You know, parents are working, their time, unfortunately, is reduced. So teachers become these parental role models for kids. And so the kids are watching, you know, how the teachers manage, how they respond, how they handle adversity, or them sharing vignettes about their lives and how they deal with different things. So yes, we have to like talk the talk, but also the kids are watching to see how we actually behave and pull it off.
I want to go back to the story you told of the young girl who the teacher made the attendance monitor.
Oh, yeah.
And the giving her of the clipboard, and how important that was for her to have a purpose, right? Like, she was given a purpose, and having that purpose altered how she showed up every day. And that is stunning to
me. Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely. It gave her a purpose. It also made her, the message communicated to her was explicitly and implicitly that we think we could, if we think you could do this, you have an asset that you could bring to the community, the classroom, and you could be very helpful. And I think that kids, to a large degree, they like to help. I think if you tell a child, these are your chores. Chores
no
is a loaded word. But I think if you tell a child, I could really use your help. I wonder if you could give me a hand. Somehow that might be more palatable, I think, to many children. So yes, giving her the clipboard made it seem official, like it's a real job. And it was a prop. And she filled it out very diligently every day.
Yeah, it's so cool. Mm-hmm. And it was such a simple thing. Maybe that's why I wanted to go back to it, because it was such a simple shift mm-hmm. that brought her along beautifully and impacted every other area of her life.
It did, behaviorally, at home and at school, and socially. By the end of the school year, she actually was one of the better students in the class. She became more involved in the class, more connected. And she was sitting with kids at lunch much more frequently than she had earlier in the year. Mother reported that she had play dates, over the months. So what we really see is that when children feel purposeful, as you said, and they have something to offer, it enhances their self-image, their self-esteem, and they don't feel so hopeless. They feel like, yeah, I got something on the ball. I could do something with this. And it just enhances their whole sense of self.
And we all can. We all can do something. There is not a human that is not capable of doing something.
Absolutely. And that's the point, that one of the tenets of the strength-based model is that we believe that all children or people have something that they can bring, something that they can offer. And we have to, sometimes we have to try to tap into it and do a little search for it, you know, if it's not immediately apparent. But people generally have something they can absolutely demonstrate their competencies with and feel good about it.
Yeah. Dr. Stephen Barron, thank you for joining me today on the show. I want to give a plug to your book, Teaching with a Strength-Based Approach, How to Motivate Students and Build Relationships. This is good for not only the kids that we have in school, but for anybody seeking to build more skills in this SEL or social emotional learning realm.
Absolutely.
To learn more about Steve's work, please visit drstephenbarron.com. You can find him on X, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Dr. Stephen Barron. And that's Baron. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Lisa. This was a pleasure. It was very enjoyable.
Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Dr. Stephen Barron, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day, and remember to be kind to one another. Want to explore more sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content at More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness on Substack and Medium. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the excellent team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.